All right, welcome to another episode of Beer Pinions Podcast. I am Pat Berger, and with me, as always, is Bruce White. Not Chris. His name isn't Chris, it's Bruce.
Yeah, man. You got it.
How are we doing?
I'm like the opposite of Bruce Wayne, but still have the same name, middle name.
Yeah, you know? You're not Batman nor a billionaire.
Yeah, miss on both of those. Doing well, man. You know, we're marching into spring here. It's been a little warmer lately. It's good.
Yeah, had a gorgeous weekend.
Yeah.
The beer garden was rocking at Kaiser Tiger.
Nice. Is the bocce up yet?
Bocce's up. Everything's
sweet.
Happening. Yeah. It was fantastic. I went to the Cub game opener last night. The weather did not cooperate.
Yeah.
And
at least you didn't get hammered by thunderstorms like it looked like for a little bit, right?
No, we did.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my Cub friends who, you know, were nice enough to take me to the game.
Yep.
Wanted to see this banner raising, right?
Right.
Which was really the only part that I didn't want to see. And we got there earliest I've ever been to a Cub game, you know. Usually I like to saunter in about the third inning. You know,
yeah,
but this they were supposed to put it up at 6:15. We got there at 5:45, and the rain started.
Yep,
and they did not raise this banner until 8:30 at night, and they wouldn't let you leave. And I sat there drinking $9 beers, questioning my decisions. But
they wouldn't let you leave.
No. No. In the end, it was a very nice ceremony. As much as I, you know. Dislike them winning a World Series. It was a classy ceremony. I enjoyed it. It was nice. Congratulations to the Cubs. I hope it's another 108 years.
Nice.
But I'm not bitter.
No. That's good. Oh, man.
All right. So lots going on here. As always in the craft beer world, there are many, many controversies and dramas and
man, I love it. Lots this week. Last couple weeks.
Yeah. Not sure if I love it, but it's here, and we're going to talk about it on Beer Opinions. Yeah. Let's start with a story that broke a few days ago about the Brew Dogs. For those of you who aren't familiar with Brew Dogs, they are a Scottish brewery, the fastest growing brewery in the United Kingdom. And they have a show here in the U.S. on the Esquire Network called Brew Dogs, which I had the pleasure of being on their Chicago episode. Took the two Scottish lads through a beer and bacon tasting. Very nice guys. We had a very good time and got pretty hammered afterwards on some Three Floyds Dreadnought and had a genuinely good time. They have announced that they have partnered with TSG, they are called, I believe, right?
Yep, you got it.
And TSG is a San Francisco-based private equity investor. What does that mean? They're basically a group of people with a large amount of money, and they invest in companies. You know, several of them we've heard of. What, you know, the Brew Dogs failed to mention is that one of those companies that they've invested in is Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer. So the Brew Dogs, you know, they raised what I thought was an enormous amount of money through crowdfunding. It's basically kind of being an investor, but, you know, I don't know exactly the details on it. You do get stocks, and that is how they've facilitated their growth so far. I think they were raised over $5 million crowdfunding. They were looking for $25 million, so they weren't quite there. They're getting ready to open. They don't have much of a presence here in the States, mostly, I would say, because their beer is sort of just copying American beer, and it's more expensive and doesn't come in as fresh as, you know, if I was just to buy American IPAs. So they've never really gotten a foothold beer-wise in this country, but their show is incredibly popular, and they want to jump on that popularity, and they're opening a big brewery in Ohio, as well as a craft beer hotel that will have a tap in every room, which sounds pretty awesome to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'd
stay there.
I kind of want to hate on it, but at the same point, how can?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that sounds great.
When
a mini bar in the shower is part of the tagline for their hotel.
Yep, and a hot tub filled with IPA filled hot tub, which I don't know. I mean that.
Yeah, that sounds gross.
Sounds gross, right?
Yeah. Although that's popular in Europe, they're in. I want to say the Czech Republic and maybe Austria or something. They have spas where you bathe in beer.
Yeah. Exfoliates. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know what it does, but
just an excuse to be close to beer.
Maybe. maybe. I'm not drinking that bathwater though.
Yeah, no, that's a waste of good beer.
It seems like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, all good in the hood, but. They have partnered, obviously, now with this. They've sold a 23% stake to TSG, and which, you know, that's what you have to do if you want to go up and play with the big boys. You need money, right? And unless you win the lottery, where does this money come from? It comes from big money investors, and this is one of the ways of doing it. Many other breweries have also gotten money through private equity. Sweetwater, actually... is also funded by TSG.
Founders raised.
Founders' money comes from another brewery conglomerate out of Spain. So that's a little different. But you know, this is another way to do it. Now, the question is, can you be punk, which is BrewDog's sort of tagline? In fact, they even tried to sue. A bar that had the word punk in its name, as if you can own punk. I mean, is there anything less punk than copywriting the word punk?
You've officially crossed the line there.
I mean, that's an oxymoron and a half. So they've already kind of, you know, had some blowback on their image compared to their practice. And, you know, they opened their big mouths last year about some of these brewery sales, and even went as far as to stop selling. I know Lagunitas; they stopped selling. They own a chain of pubs, which is legal in most of Europe.
Tide houses, right? Yep.
And not legal here, but they stopped carrying Lagunitas and Goose Island, I believe. And they said some pretty nasty things about Goose Island when they were here in town filming, even a few years back. So, you know. Now they've kind of gone and done the same thing. And Tony McGee from Lagunitas, he found himself in this same predicament, right?
It's kind of like being a Batman. When there's a quote in Batman where in The Dark Knight, great movie, very Chicago, where, you know, one of the characters says, you know, you either die a hero or live long enough to become a villain. And I mean... It's not necessarily true, but I think a lot of these brewers, as they grow, they have to go through more traditional kind of corporate routes, and they find themselves doing things that they spoke out against not long in the past. And I think these are great examples of that.
They are. You know, it's another example of maybe if you keep your mouth shut and concentrate on what you're doing, and not be concerned about what others are doing, at least publicly. I mean, you always have to be concerned about what other people are doing privately because, you know, you're in the same marketplace as them and you have to watch your competitors. But it comes back to bite you sometimes, and that's what's happening here. I don't know. You know, I think they'll survive it, and, you know, it'll be fine. But, you know, there was an Onion-esque article going around that said after... BrewDog sellout. BrewDog bars now refusing to sell BrewDog beer, and you know
I believed it for a split second. I was like, wait a second, hey, they got me.
So you know, I with any of these acquisitions and or investments with breweries, I take it on a case by case basis, and it's a little more work, you know, and you kind of have to, you know, try to see where the money's coming from, and you know. There's sort of, I say this all the time, only a Sith deals in absolutes, right? That's the old Star Wars saying. And a lot of people deal in absolutes with this. As soon as that brewery sells a stake to a bigger brewery and or an investment firm or whatever they're doing, that's it. They're not drinking that beer anymore. Or if they're a beer buyer, they're not buying that beer anymore. And that's fine. I mean, you know, if that's the way you want to, you know, it's your money and you can spend it any way you want. I'm just too big of a whore for good beer, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't let those things stop me from having a nice pint. And I don't. But I, you know, you do have to reevaluate that beer once it's, you know, even a beer that's privately owned, when they expand, you know, the process of making that beer changes. That's
right.
Just a fact. And you have to, you know, sort of reevaluate the liquid coming out of there.
Yeah, Josh Knoll, great reporter for the Tribune, beer reporter, he had an article about how Goose Island kind of had to retweak the beers, Anheuser-Busch, after they bought them, because, you know, they're brewing them now on their mainstream beers on such a kind of huge level, and how the recipes effectively changed pretty substantially to try to get the same flavor profile.
Yes. Goose is an interesting story in this, right?
Yeah.
And they, you know, their merger with Anheuser-Busch has been good and bad.
Right.
And, you know, again, not all of this is black and white. But if you were a big fan of Goose Island IPA, and a lot of people here in Chicago were, that beer changed immensely.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not have the brewing equipment at Anheuser-Busch to make that beer. They just didn't. Now, to their, you know, to give them credit, they specifically rearranged a brew house, I want to say in Colorado or maybe in New York, put in a hop back and all of the kind of things that they needed to try to do to recreate that beer. They've tried very hard, but I did have one last night at the ball game, and it wasn't there, you know.
Yeah.
It was pretty mediocre.
Yep.
Now, at the same time, all of the beer coming out of the Fulton Brewery down the street here from Kaiser Tiger has just gotten better and better since the merger. And that's the beer we buy. And
that's most of the specialty beers, right?
It's pretty much everything except IPA, 312, Green Line,
Honkers.
Anything you get in a can.
Yeah.
If you see a Goose Island in a can, four star pills,
yep.
Those are all made at a AB plant.
Yeah.
So they don't have a canning line in Fulton.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's a telltale sign there that it was made by Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah.
But. You know, so none of these things are black and white again. Mm-hmm. You know, for Goose, it was good and bad. For someone like Firestone Walker, who, you know, sold a majority stake to Duval Morgat, that, you know, I think it's been good. You know, there's more a beer to buy. The quality has been fantastic. Some of that beer has come out of different breweries, and I have not noticed a difference. So, you know, it can be good and bad.
Yep.
The moral of the story, right, is keep your mouth shut. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and I think that I was thinking about this. You know, it's one thing if brewers, particularly small brewers, criticize people or other companies if they're doing illegitimate things. If they're using, like, you know, and if you follow the beer scene, you know that in the past brewers have done some pretty shady stuff, and primarily the big guys from time to time. So I, you know, that's one thing, but it's another thing when these brewers, and I get why they do it, they're using the big guy as kind of their marketing thing. Right, that's the deal. They're the little guy, and as a consumer, I love supporting the little guy. So
right.
It makes a lot of marketing sense. But when they use that and go too far, then it becomes a foot and mouth situation.
Well, yeah, I mean, craft beer rose using a David versus Goliath kind of ethos, and now that they're
some of it was legitimate. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But now that they're some of them are becoming Goliaths, we get into some strange times. It's fun, you know. It's never boring.
Yeah, and I
will. I just want to say when you know, when I sell Patty Longs to the McDonald's Corporation for $1 billion, $1 billion, I'm not taking a penny less than $1 billion.
Just don't forget the little people, you know.
No, I'm going to forget all of you, and I don't care what you say about me. Call me whatever you want. I won't hear it on my private island. Okay.
with the BrewDog guys and Tony McGee. And
that's right. We're all going to have a party on a private island. Sellout island.
Oh, man.
All right.
But I was also going to say, too, the BrewDog guys are amazing marketers. So this kind of plays into it, too. Like, that Beer Hotel, when that came out, it was sent to me by like 30 different people. I was like, I get it. There's a Beer Hotel coming.
Oh, I know. I mean, these guys really made their mark with the strongest beer ever, right?
Yep.
The
taxidermied squirrel, right?
Tactical Nuclear Penguin. They only made like 12 bottles of the shit. That became a worldwide story.
It was like tens of thousands of dollars, I think, or thousands of dollars. And then I posted it. It was an old article, but it came up again. I posted it like last year in November, and it was the most popular post I had all year on the Facebook Beer Tour Facebook page. And I was like, you know, that just shows you.
It's
like
the second time we've talked about it on this stupid podcast.
Yeah, sorry. I keep bringing
that
up.
That's how big it was.
So these guys, I feel like, you know, their marketing, it's going to cut both ways. They're going to be controversial. That's kind of their shtick. And so they can get caught in this type of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know. All the power to them, I guess.
But if they want to sponsor us for a podcast at their beer hotel, I'm sure we'd be game.
I'm in, yes. Yeah. I need the luxury suite, though.
Yeah.
When I
live from the beer hot tub. No, nobody needs to. We don't need to do that. Yeah.
That's a vlog all day long. That's video.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so moving on to some more upset brewers. We've got two stories that came out this week that I think are linked. One is Jim Cook's op-ed column in, I believe, the New York Times.
Yeah, he went big.
Yes, it is called "Is It Last Call for Craft Beer?" And Jim Cook is, for those of you who don't know, the owner of Sam Adams, the second largest craft brewer in the country. Craft brewer being a designation by the Brewers Association that signifies a brewery that makes more flavorful beer using traditional methods and cannot be over, I don't know, a huge amount of beer. It used to be kind of a small amount. Now it is how many millions of barrels? 6 million barrels
million,
is what
yeah.
you're allowed to make. And be a craft brewer.
And it's kind of a running joke. It's like whatever is just above Sam Adams is whatever. That's what I tell people. I'm like, whatever is a little
they
above.
Did, they yeah. changed, when they changed yeah. the 6 million, that was to not lose the Sam Adams numbers. Now, those numbers for craft beer are going down because of things like the Lagunitas sale and, you know, Goose Island's numbers wouldn't be included in there anymore. There's a whole bunch of breweries, you know. 10
Point.
Barrel,
yep.
Ballast Point, Elysian, all of those guys who have been acquired by other breweries. I believe it's you can't have more than a 23% stake, 25% stake of another of a macro brewery and still be considered craft. So all of those numbers have gone away, and it's making craft beer look pretty flat. And you know, people don't realize that things like brew pubs and growler sales and stuff like that are not necessarily included in those numbers. So, it kind of looks like things are going downhill for craft beer. Yet, you know, in my opinion, drinkers have never been more aware of craft beer. They've never been more knowledgeable about it, and they've never been more enthused about it than they are now. And I think so, you know, so we've got Jim Cook complaining because Sam Adams is not doing well. And then another article came out in Good Beer Hunting, an interview with Ken Grossman and his brother. What's his brother's name?
Brian Grossman.
And Brian Grossman. And Brian kind of goes off a little bit, and he, you know, calls craft brewing a dying art form. And his point is sort of all of these new little breweries are giving craft beer a bad name, because they're not doing a very good job with their quality control, and it's turning off drinkers from craft beer. And he's saying this in the midst of Sierra Nevada, who expanded immensely 3 years ago when they opened this new brewery in Asheville. And their numbers are not, I think, where they would like them to be. So these are two perspectives of two of the biggest craft brewers in the country saying, hey, you know, both of them kind of giving different reasons for their declining sales, but both of them saying there's a problem here.
Yeah, and because Jim Cook blamed the big guys, which has been his kind of drumbeat for forever, really.
Yeah, he's had an ongoing feud with Anheuser-Busch, no question. He's worried about the distribution. And, you know, there was a major merger here, right? So Anheuser-Busch and MillerCoors have merged, although not in the U.S. I don't understand it at all.
I tried to figure this out, and it was like I was solving a murder and had all these little pins in the string on the thing. So, because in North America, they had to sell off and then MillerCoors has kind of taken that wing of that. But, it gets so confusing in the post.
Yeah, they basically have to stay separate here in the States for anti-monopoly laws, but worldwide they are merged. And
they still control a lot of the beer market.
A lot. Yeah. I think ABI controls 52% of the beer in the United States. That's a shitload.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he's kind of placing the blame on them a little bit, a lot, and having it to do with them controlling the distribution throughout the country, you know, having just a big, powerful arm to tell the distributors what to do. Some people have pointed out that Sam Adams, you know, does a little bit of the same. You know, they're pretty big. They control 1% of the beer market in the U.S., and while that doesn't sound like a lot,
for a craft brewer,
it's massive.
Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they certainly, you know, have huge pull with their distributors and incentivize their distributors and do all of those, you know, kind of things that the big guys do as well. So, you know, man, you know, there's a lot of questions here, Bruce.
Yeah, and you know, on both of these, I'm just going to say, like, it's obviously nuanced and we can talk about it. In my opinion, they're both wrong on both sides of this. And you know, my gut is, in the Brewers Association, speaking in numbers, just came out, we have over 5,300 breweries now in the United States. And that is up from 1,800 in 2008. So that is an insane growth trajectory, even for little guys. So I don't think you can at least – I understand the concerns, and I think there are still valid concerns about distribution and the big boys and controlling too much. But the market has been so – there are so many little guys that are starting. It's hard to kind of keep blaming the boogeyman of Anheuser-Busch and MillerCoors at this particular moment in time. I just don't see it. I think, and if you look at the sales, my guess is it's the little guys eating Sam Adams lunch more so than AB and MillerCoors. They're not losing sales as much to MillerCoors or Anheuser-Busch. Maybe if you look at Goose Island and what they're doing with some of their acquired craft bands, but they're losing it to the guy down the street that's starting up.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. You know, I think it's, you know, Brian Grossman is probably more spot on, but he's being pretty shitty for, you know, kind of blaming the quality of some of this beer for his declining numbers. I applaud Sierra Nevada for the effort and time and money that they've put into the quality of their beers. It's almost unmatched in craft beer, what they've done. But the lack of quality in small craft brewers in America is not a new issue. It has been there since the 80s. I drank so much shitty beer in the 90s. It was unbelievable. And, a lot of people blame it for the crash of 99 in this business. And they could be right. So he went through that, and he's predicting – you know, a similar thing. I don't think that that's going to be the case. I think we're really in a golden age of beer.
Yep.
There's a lot of really good craft beer out there, a lot. And there's a lot of shitty craft beer, but that's just because there's a lot of craft beer. And they're getting better. And the tools are there that weren't there in the 90s. The experienced brewers are here where they weren't there in the 90s.
Right. In some of the shitty craft beer, and I don't think this is Sierra or Sam Adams, but some of the shittiest craft beer I've had is from some of those big, sometimes legacy craft brewers.
For me personally, it's still coming from little guys.
Yeah.
But you know, I taste probably 30 different beers a week.
Yeah.
That come in the door, and yes, a lot of them have some serious issues. But that's nothing new to me.
Right. And I was going to say a couple things, and I'm curious on your opinions on this, because I was thinking about this. One is, when you start a new business, it sometimes takes a little while to find your groove. And I don't care what business you're starting, whether it's an accounting firm or a brewery. So, you know, is there, and it's so competitive now that I think there probably isn't much leeway. But should there be a little leeway? Like, I'm willing to give a little leeway if you start and, you know, you get a little time there. It's kind of like a quarterback being drafted in the NFL. Do they have to start right away? Or do you give them a year to kind of learn the playbook?
Absolutely. You have to give these guys time to tweak. And, you know, the really good ones plan on dumping some beer.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody has that luxury. They don't have the money to do that.
Sure.
You know, dumping a batch of beer means going out of business sometimes. I've said to a lot of these brewers when they come in here, and, you know, of course, when they've got their first batches of beer and they want to get on at the big beer bars in Chicago and they run straight to us, you know, and I'll taste them and be like, you know, why don't you bring me your third or fourth batch?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and I always try to tell them what I think is wrong. And nurture them, not just blow them off, you know. And I've had brewers, you know, take that advice, come back to me, hey, you know. And sometimes it's not even a technical flaw. Sometimes I'm just like, you know, this saison should really not be this sweet, or you know, whatever it is. And they take that advice and they come back and they bring me something better, and I buy it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That's always been my philosophy on it. I think. You know, I'm going to throw out something that I don't know how we would do it, because, you know, the BA has done such a number separating David and Goliath, separating craft and macro. I think there needs to be sort of a merger. And I think we need, you know, the craft beer term, and people have been talking about this for a couple of years. Does it really mean anything anymore? You know, what does it mean? We know exactly what it means to the Brewers Association, but, you know, like last week I made a collaboration beer with the boys at Pig Mines that I make every summer with them. It's called Monchichi Throwdown, and it is
that's a good one. Yeah.
It's a corn lager, you know. I mean, it is a
adjunct,
very much a macro influenced summer, you know, crushing lager, as light can be. And but it's craft beer, I guess, because we only made 7 barrels of it, and it comes out of a little brewery. And you know, Carson and I, the brewmaster there, you know, we hand stir that mash, and you know, do all of the traditional brewing techniques that you're supposed to do.
But for corn,
it's a corn lager, which you know, according to the BA, is an adjunct beer that shouldn't be craft beer. So I think, you know, I like to think of just beer as beer, you know, and that's why I have Goose Island on tap and I have Lagunitas on tap. I like to have just the best beer I can find, you know, and separating a beer into two categories is impossible. I mean, they're just, you know, there's really good beer being made by really giant corporations.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's the responsibility of the consumer, but it's so hard with 5,300 breweries and what now. I think it might be over 30,000 SKUs, 30,000 individual beers being brewed. It's something like that.
It is.
I mean,
the mass public has to categorize this stuff to help them out in the grocery store aisle where they're staring at you know, 600 brands of beer.
Yeah. When I walk into Binny's, sometimes I freeze, and this is my job, you know, where it's like, holy smokes, you know, like, I haven't even seen some of these before. And then I have to be like, well, what? Why don't I, you know, like, what is this? But, you know, I don't think this is going to get any easier when it comes to a consumer level. You just have to do the best you can to be educated. But there is kind of a how important is local versus how important is quality? And there's going to be a lot of situations where those don't overlap.
For sure.
Yeah.
The one easy thing about local, especially for your average consumer who isn't listening to this podcast,
right.
You know.
Hi, Dad. Although he's not average. You're not average,
he's
Dad.
Not
I
average.
Love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Great man. you know, but your average consumer, if he knows where that brewery is, it's down the block, and he maybe has even popped in there and had a beer and seen the guys making it, there's no question to him that that is craft beer, you know? And instead of, you know, memorizing the BA's definition of it and staring at, you know, 600 brands that are all trying to disguise themselves as craft beer.
Right. These days especially.
Right. Which, you know, it's funny in that Sam Adams article where he kind of calls out, you know, Terrapin and Goose Island. And yet, you know, how many people know that he makes Angry Orchard Cider or that he makes the Traveler Shandy crap, what, you know, or, you know, he makes an alcoholic soda. It's like a club soda, but with alcohol. It's pretty
Zima's
good.
Zima's coming
actually.
Back, by the way.
Zima's coming back, yeah. Yeah. This stuff, I can't remember the name of it, but Sam Adams makes, it's like a lightly flavored soda water. It's almost like...
LaCroix?
It's like alcoholic LaCroix.
Oh, that's dangerous, man.
It's so dangerous.
Yeah, like why would you make that? That's that's just asking for really skinny women to be hammered.
Yes.
And myself, too, by the way.
Yeah, you know, really fat bearded guys like me, hammered. It tasted pretty good.
Yeah.
And my rep was like, oh, so you'll buy some? I'm like, no, I'm not fucking buying this. Sorry. Have you been to my bar before? No, I'm not buying this, but it's pretty good. So, you know, he is also in that game of disguising brands. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate that he has to be in that game because some people just don't buy Sam Adams. You know, it's, you know, to them it's airport beer. It's beer they can get at the 7-Eleven, and they're not, you know, interested in that. So... I don't, you know, I don't have the answers for them. I think, the big guys in the craft are feeling a pinch. I think concentrating on quality that Sierra Nevada does is a good way to go at it.
Yes.
You know, it's a good way to distinguish yourself. Sure. Maybe everyone's heard of us and that's not interesting, but you know, you're going to get a perfectly made beer every time you buy us, you know, and really hammer that home. I don't know. I'm not a marketer.
Yeah, I think these guys are going to face continued pressure, at least in the short to midterm, until the beer market kind of starts to flatten out a little bit.
It is, yeah. I mean, they have the resources to weather this storm, and they will.
Yeah. And Sam Adams is a publicly traded company.
It is,
and their share price is like $100-something a share. Like, you know, I mean, they're going to be okay. But I was going to also say, I think...
Until he sells, and then he's really going to regret that op-ed column.
Yeah, right. But he...
No, he won't, because he'll be on our private island. Sellout island.
Oh, man. Oh, God. I'm going to come out with some type of cider or something. I need to get into this game, or some type of Zima-esque type of thing.
Yeah, all we drink on Sellout Island is the alcoholic LaCroix. There's no beer there.
But, yeah, I think that... He wrote that op-ed so he could go to his shareholders because I think they're kind of missing some numbers now. So I think there's a selfish reason for him.
Yeah, I think he's also trying to spark a conversation. The Craft Brewers Conference started yesterday or the day before
in D.C.,
and they're all together, and he tends to do these things before, you know, stuff like that. And it's everyone's going to be talking. We're sitting here talking about it, right?
Yep.
And, you know, he's a smart motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know, he went to Harvard and all that shit. He's smarter than all of us.
And he has done a lot of good things for craft beer, too.
Oh, no question. No question.
That he's not an evil dude. I don't think that. He's supported and pushed Kraft for a long time. So
yes.
A lot of, yeah.
Despite the fact that in a blog I threatened to punch him in the balls, I do respect Jim Cook.
You can Google it. It's front page.
I didn't know it was going to go that viral. I would not have threatened bodily harm on an old man. And nor will I ever punch him in the balls if we ever meet. But I'm sure he's avoiding me.
Yeah. Yeah. But and then Sierra Nevada, I think they're self-interested too, because they're kind of just like sometimes people use marketing, the BrewDog guys or whoever, little breweries will say, hey, we're the little guys, drink us, support local. They're kind of saying, oh, you know what? That local beer might not be as quite as good as ours. Like
right.
They're kind of marketing
of
in
course.
A different way.
Yeah, you have to look at their perspective. What are they coming at you from, you know, what do they have to gain by what they're saying? Same with me and you, you know?
Yeah.
If I'm sitting here talking about beer bars and, you know, how great my bar is, it's, you know, a totally biased, probably bullshit opinion. Because that's, you know, we're in a business and we're clouded by that.
Yeah, and like when I talk about pedal pubs and how unsafe they are and how you're probably inviting your own death, you know, it's going to take just one somebody to take them out. You know, I'm self-interested.
I saw one in Asheville, by the way, and I thought of you. And I mean, they were screaming and yelling off of it, getting ready to fall over.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh, Bruce. Got to get one of these.
Just inflatable penises everywhere.
Yes. You know, it's a fuel-friendly trolley.
Yeah, yeah.
We had to kick out a trolley here on Saturday
night.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. And after kicking them out, they were slamming a bottle of Jameson on the front sidewalk. So I came out and said, hey, you know, can't drink a fucking bottle of Jameson on my sidewalk. And, of course, just to, like, solidify what a douchebag this guy was, he said, I'll be yelping about this.
Oh, is that another? He's not going to take a dump in the sink, is he?
I don't know. I hope not. I hope he hadn't sharded himself before yelping, but you guys can Google that. But, yes, just, you know, as if I didn't have a low enough opinion of him, he threatened me with a Yelp review.
There's something about trolleys, man. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Have I had some times on trolleys? Yeah. But it's like, once you get on a trolley, it's all of a sudden like you're transported to some non-extradition country and you have no rules. I don't know what
it is. Yeah. Just to let people on trolleys know, you're not in international waters, okay?
It's like,
you can't have any monkey knife fights on the trolley. They're not legal just because you're on a trolley.
It's just
okay?
Ridiculous. Yeah. Oh, man.
But we digress.
Yeah. Oh, man, I did want to touch base on this one article, especially because I wanted to talk to you about it, it from a bar owner perspective. But there was another article that came out, and it was like, how can craft beer companies survive? So obviously it's going into kind of the one angle was like, how can all of these new breweries kind of get their beers and survive? But also, how can bars increase sales? And it was saying that it would publish ratings for the beer. So you might go into a bar and on the menu it would say the Rate Beer, Beer Advocate, or Untappd rating next to it. And you know, it's, and apparently they tried this and the number the number shot up like pretty substantially. Like it went from like 13% to 20%, it's crazy how big of it jumped.
Yeah,
so
this was a Market Watch article by Jason Knott, who I met on another podcast on the Beer Temple podcast. Yeah, we were on together. Really smart guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's like the opposite of me. He knows all the numbers and has facts to back up all of the things he says. Unlike me, who
he doesn't belong in Trump's America, man.
I didn't belong on the same podcast as him. But yes, he. You know, I have done that, and the beer has flown. You know, it's been a long time since I've done that, but you know, I used to have beer events, and I would put, you know, 99 Rate Beer rating, you know, at the end of the beer description or something, and those beers flew.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
You would just do it for the ones that were the highest rated, like,
well,
it's
yeah,
way to sell them.
I don't tend to put 66 rating on Rate Beer on the beer menu. That's just to ensure that I had that cake for the next 8 months.
This is one of the lowest rated Kolsch's.
But you know, then I started to like highly disagree with a lot of ratings on Rate Beer and Beer Advocate. Yeah. That's when I stopped a few years ago putting that on there, just because I didn't want people to rely on those ratings. I want them to rely on their own palate, or more specifically, my palate.
Yeah, right. Like, because
I'm
the
one choosing
here.
The beers,
I'm
right?
I'm the expert.
Yes, yeah.
If it's here,
like,
it's
I'm
good.
Just going to tell you what to drink now, and you drink it. No, but I mean, I there's a lot of really great beers on those websites that don't have the best ratings. So I kind of steered away from it, but it does work. He's right, and I'm sure, you know, I remember there's a brewery here in town who abandoned this philosophy very quickly, but... Empirical Brewery.
Yeah.
When they first came out, they said they were only going, you know, if any of their beers dropped below like a 90% rating, or I want to say they said 99%. It's something ridiculous.
They said a little high bar.
Yeah. Then we're not going to make that beer again. And then they realized, like, well, none of the beers are getting that rating, and we can't just come out with a different beer every week. That's not really that sound of a strategy. And they kind of abandoned the whole thing. But, you know, a lot of brewers pay attention to those ratings, and those ratings do equate to sales. You know, so, you know, it's the same with a restaurant and Yelp, although I don't pay attention to Yelp. I do read reviews from websites that I think are credible, pretty much any website except Yelp. And, you know, you have to, and those things do drive business, and, yeah, I, you know. Yeah, I agree with him. And he's also saying that in that article that when you lower the choice,
yep,
it actually increases sales on beer.
Which is, I feel like, a pretty widely known consumer behavior that is not practiced.
Mm-hmm.
Like the toothpaste aisle is a great example. When I go into like a toothpaste aisle at a grocery store, or I was even saying Binnie's for beer, yeah. I kind of start sometimes will freeze. Toothpaste style, I'm like, what the hell? What is the difference on these things? Like, you gotta be kidding me. And so I feel like it's the same thing at play. You give consumers too much choice, and it'll fatigue them.
Right. And I want to say this was a wine-focused restaurant that they did the experiment in.
Yeah, because they went from like 6 to 12,
right.
So they can't be like a huge beer bar.
Right, so this is not indicative of beer bars. This is just sales in general at you know, a normal restaurant. And yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff. Market Watch is a pretty great website when it comes to numbers and
the beer industry. They have a lot of great articles.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think that we'll see more of this, my guess is, but I my concern is kind of to yours, and you've brought this up a million times, where you know, those rating sites will favor styles, particularly your hoppy beers or your imperial stouts, over other styles. So it's really hard once you get past some of those popular styles to know if what is it, like I love Kolsch's, just to throw out a style. I can't think of a last, like when you see a Kolsch that's rated, it'll be rated like 73 or something on Rate Beer, and then it'll be like top 50 Kolsch, you know, because that style is just not a highly rated style by consumers.
You'll see it in their review where they're like, oh, this beer was so good. It's the best Kolsch I've ever had.
3.5.
Yeah.
You're like, come on, guys.
You know?
God damn it.
Give it a 5, you know, and then, you know, it'll be a Russian Imperial Stout. You know, it was okay. I've had better. 5 stars.
Yeah, I know. It drives me nuts.
Yeah.
So, like, but then I was also thinking, too, like, how I buy wine. And wine just mystifies me for whatever reason. I like, if it's not in a box, then I don't know what to do. But, you know, those things are helpful. You walk through the wine aisles, and I'm like, I don't know. I want to spend, like, $10, $12. And
big
then I'm
time.
Like,
I mean.
And then it's like, this one got a 90. I'm like, well, that's got to be.
Right.
I'm going to take that one over the other one, that unless one of them has a better label.
You know? I know, you know, people are complaining about the number of beer labels out there, but it still pales compared to wine.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how winophiles figure, you know, how they keep it all straight. They can't, possibly.
I have no idea. I just break out into a cold sweat and go to the Boone's Farm.
There you go. I just always let someone who knows more about it pick them out for me.
That's a good strategy. Yes. That's a good strategy.
So, anyway, This is good stuff this week, Chris. Or Bruce. Sorry. Bruce.
No worries, man. No worries. Either one works. I don't know who I am anymore.
What do you got going on with the tour? You got any events coming up? You going to any events?
Wow. Well, actually, we're doing an event here at Kaiser Tiger. Thank you so much.
Oh, yes.
We're doing a little tasting class for a corporate group. It looks like it's going to be 35-ish people and on Friday. So that'll be fun. And thank you for having us.
My pleasure.
And then other than that, the tours are cranking. We've got all three tours, and it's been a busy start to the year, so kind of
it
main
has,
season.
Yeah.
So it's good.
We've seen it over at Patty's.
Yeah.
And this isn't even really tourist season
yet
at all.
It's kind of starting off hot. So hopefully that'll continue. Yeah, kind of the scoop.
Good.
How about you?
I am leaving on vacation Friday, going to Ireland.
Yeah.
Very excited, taking the whole family, spring break, 2017. And we are going to visit a buddy of mine who opened a brewery in Killarney.
Sweet.
Called Killarney Brewing. I'll give a full report when I come back. I go to Ireland pretty often. My last couple trips there, I've tried to delve into the craft beer scene there, which is really hot. You know, it's really, you know, taking a hold. And but I haven't had anything really great over there yet. So, you know, it's been 2 years since I've been there. I imagine things have gotten a lot better, and I'm gonna actually drink some beer that isn't Guinness. But I'm also gonna drink a lot of Guinness. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, should be nice. And then when we get back, we've got a Mother's Day crawfish boil here at Kaiser Tiger.
Sweet.
My friends are coming up from the Mid-City Yacht Club in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. You do that every year,
right?
We
do that every year.
Yeah,
And I go down to their bar, and we do a bacon bomb deal in the fall. So can't wait for that. And, you know, Patty Long's has so many events, I can't even keep track. My new manager over there is doing a great job, Kristen. Shout out to Kristen.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yep. And, loving life. Can't complain.
Sweet.
So that wraps up another Beer Opinions podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening. Tell your friends about us. Hopefully the audio problems were good this or not too apparent this week. And they will only get better as we keep investing in equipment.
Yeah.
That's all we can do.
Shout out to Matt, Dan, and Katie. Thank you for listening. Shooting me the texts.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Yeah, you know, got to keep the fans.
Yeah, and Jordan over at Pig Minds said he's been listening.
All right.
Assistant brewer over there, and shout out to him. And thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Today.